This is a message from sponsor Intuit TurboTax. You've sent so many emails to your tax pro and nothing. It feels like you're chasing updates. But now your taxes are done for you by a TurboTax expert, so you actually know what's happening. You can match with an expert and just hand off all your tax stuff to them right in the app. So instead of guessing, you can feel confident your TurboTax expert's on it. Now this is taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Visit TurboTax.com to learn more. Only available with TurboTax experts. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile app.
It's a brand new best podcast in baseball. And then there was one, not one podcast or only one person talking to you on this podcast, but one remaining all-star on the Cardinals roster. That's right. It's Brendan Donovan after the Cardinals traded Nolan Arenado to Arizona. Joining me this week is Nathan Mills, editor at the Post-Dispatch, to talk about the trade more than a year in the making. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week again by editor Nathan Mills from the Post-Dispatch. Nathan, how did the news hit you? The Cardinals, they trade Nolan Arenado along with close to $30 million for a right-handed pitcher who was drafted in the eighth round this past year. What'd you think as you read about it, as you heard about it, as you saw it happen?
Yeah, so it's, you know, year in the making. This is a thing that they've talked about since openly, you know, since last offseason. Of course, it's been, you know, one of the biggest topics among fans. And then it got here. And, you know, honestly, I kind of felt like when it got here that, like, you know, there would be like a celebration or there would be, you know, there would be more fanfare to it. But it was just like, meh. You know, it happened. It's like the Stranger Things finale. That's how I felt about it. You know,
did
like,
you?
Waiting for all the pomp and circumstance, and then it was just, it's over.
It was shorter, though, than the episodes. Like, let's be honest. Like, the Nolan Arenado it was shorter than a few of the Stranger Thing episodes.
Especially in my house, because my daughter's been watching them on repeat for 6 months, so it's gotcha. Felt like, yeah, it's been terrible, yeah. But, yeah, just I kind of expected, you know, a little more, not necessarily in return, but just a little more fanfare, and it was just, he's gone.
Yeah, that's a tough thing, you know. I mean, you don't. You know, in a lot of ways, it is the formal end of an era, right, for the Cardinals, right? They had this rush, right, to acquire. You can go back to the offseason that began 2018, 2019. Cardinals make a trade for Paul Goldschmidt. He signs an extension. The Cardinals see this as like, okay, look, it's been a few years. They hadn't exactly made the trades that they wanted. They did get Marcell Ozuna. That didn't exactly work out as they hoped. They had several free agents turn them down. Dexter Fowler's free agent, you know, time with the Cardinals wasn't going as great as they hoped. All these things, they were like, are we still a desirable spot to play? And can you still acquire the talent that will lead to contention? And here was Paul Goldschmidt, the guy that they could get, who definitely was, you know, just a classic Cardinals move in a lot of ways. And they followed that up then with a trade for Nolan Arenado, a guy who they had tried to trade and spotted as a potential trade years before they were able to actually pull it off, but who was for a lot of his time there with Colorado the best all-around player in the game. And it was very clear to see, well, are the Rockies going to keep him? Are they going to trade him? Then they extended him, and then they didn't like fill out the team around him. It was like, all right, well, we can see how this is going to go. And the Cardinals were like, we definitely want this guy. But also, like, Arenado definitely wanted to be a Cardinal. There were a couple teams that were in on him trying to trade, and he made it possible through what he was willing to do to his contract, what he was willing to agree to as far as deferred money, to be a Cardinal. He chased the Cardinals. Here was a guy who wanted to be here, and, you know, that was like, okay, the Cardinals – felt like they were back. They were back in demand. Their history was appealing. Here was a superstar player who wanted to be a Cardinal, was willing to move his contract around to do that so that he could finish his career in St. Louis, eventually put on a red jacket, eventually tug on an STL hat, maybe at Cooperstown, eventually, you know, be one of those guests at Jupiter. I mean, he was thrilled to be a part of this Cardinal history. And so you say, like, you were expecting celebration and everything. Maybe there's some melancholy about ending with both sides wanting to leave.
Yeah, I think there absolutely is, and I think that's been pretty obvious in the way that they've, you know, talked to one another about one another in the public. You know, I don't it wasn't negative. It wasn't a bad back and forth, but you know, this is, to your point, this is a guy who wanted to be here and reaffirmed that multiple times by opting in, turning down, you know, a trade option last season or last off season. You know, and then now at the end, he called it a no brainer that he had to leave, you know. And it's one of those things, like, I think we've all kind of maybe been there in relationships, you know, and maybe in college or something, where it's just like, oh man, it just, you know, no hard feelings. It just isn't working anymore. And you go your separate ways, and you know, it came at a cost of several million dollars, but
yeah,
you know, so maybe a little bit different than any relationship I've ever been in, but yeah, I think melancholy is a great way to describe it.
Yeah. And not only that, but you had a, you know, a guy who, in the press conference when he had in Arizona, when I asked him about like what changed this year from the previous year, like it was clear a year ago that it was going to take the ideal situation from his viewpoint for him to say okay on the trade. And there were very few places that, you know, San Diego, obviously, the Dodgers, obviously, you know, his willingness to play first base was tied to San Diego, the Red Sox, a chance to reunite with Trevor Story, the Yankees, play with Paul Goldschmidt, wear the pinstripes, all that stuff, right? But he turned down the Astros. It was pretty clear at the time that, like, he saw very few situations that were better than even trying to, like, grit your teeth and play your way through wherever the Cardinals were going. So I asked him, like, what changed? And he, you know, he said in the past year he really felt like he was in the way of things and that weighed on him. I thought that was a rather candid comment. He's alluded to it a little bit before, saying, look, the Cardinals need to take a step, and it's a step that I'm not there to take with them. But the notion that he felt throughout the year that he was blocking the direction that they wanted to go, that I thought that was a level of candidness that probably also spoke to where the Cardinals are.
Yeah, it's candidness, but it's also, he's a perceptive guy, right? Like, you know, not every ball player notices that. And certainly the ones who do, not every one of those, you know, take it to heart and say, look, I have to get out of the way for this to be able to happen, which means I need to, you know, expand my options a little bit, which is what we saw, right? Like, it went from just, you know, a few teams to doubling, I think is what it ended up being by the time it was over. You know, so yeah, you know, melancholy and just, you know, I don't know, you know, it's like, I didn't expect trumpets, I guess. I just kind of expected, like, you know, okay, if the new era is officially here, let's at least celebrate that it's here and off and running. But there was none of that either. It was, you know, not melancholy even in you know, looking to the future.
It's been 3 months since, a little bit more than 3 months since Chaim Bloom took over as president of baseball operations officially. You know, in November he traded Sonny Gray. In December he traded Wilson Contreras. In January he's now traded Nolan Arenado. So that's 3 for 3 in trading.
February is going to be Donovan. Yeah, it's got to be.
It could be Donovan, and then there would be no All-Star left on the roster. So he has he's traded 3 of the highest salaried players, 3 of the most veteran players. There isn't a position player on the roster with more than 4 years of service time. There's only one, and here's a trivia question for you, Nathan. I don't expect you to get it. No pressure or anything like that. But I think there's only one position player on the roster, on the current major league roster, who has hit a home run for another team. Do you have a guess as to who that might be?
One player on the current Cardinals roster who has hit a home run. Oh, man.
For another team. Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. It would
we should give the listeners maybe a moment to think through it if they're shouting at the speaker at the moment.
I'm sure there's someone out there who knows the answer, who's like, Nathan, you moron. It's obviously, you know,
it's not obvious.
Oh man, I honestly couldn't tell you. Maybe like I don't know. I couldn't even guess.
Yeah, Pozo.
So you know what's so funny? I was gonna say one of the catchers. I forgot about Pozo. I went straight to Herrera and then on down to through the minors. And I was like, no, that couldn't be any of them. I skipped right over him.
They have a potential for an entirely homegrown opening day lineup right now. That's their only choices. They want to add a right-handed veteran bat, at some point in time, but that doesn't necessarily mean that person would be a starter, not for opening day. So you're looking at a potentially entirely homegrown lineup. If Donovan is there, then they're all 29 and younger. If he's not, then they're even younger than that. And all of this is like just a very clear sense that, look, it took those 3 months, right, with those three trades, November, December, January, to dismantle the veteran core that the Cardinals had in place that they had acquired, had tried, had signed, had moved on to either continue an era or reclaim a stake in October. And it did not happen. And now it's all come apart. It's all been picked apart very surgically.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's a lot of talk, and maybe rightfully so, about the money that was sent to dismantle that veteran core, to your point. I mean, each of those three trades sent money back to the other team to help facilitate that. You know, mm-hmm. in the case of the two Boston trades, you know, it was to facilitate that, but also get a little bit better return. In this case, it was mostly just to open a spot for another right. player.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's been a lot of talk about that. And, you know, I think surgically, you use the word surgically, that's a great way to describe it. You know, this was a tough position to be in. You know, it's sometimes it's, you know, better to be at the bottom than in the middle, you know, and I think that's where the Cardinals have kind of been for a while, is in the middle. Now they're headed to the bottom and can take a stab at really getting going back the other direction, you know, maybe with a little bit of a rocket if they can hit on a couple of these yeah. prospects and higher draft picks. Yeah.
Yeah. They have a few of the lottery tickets. So they are going to spend about $26 million in 2026. That is likely, I mean, look, any way we cut it, that's going to be their highest price player,
right?
They're going to pay more for players to play elsewhere in 2026 than they are going to pay any of their current players to play for the Cardinals. It's going to be a sizable portion of a very reduced payroll, in part because more TV turbulence ahead and another cut in revenue is expected there. Who knows where season tickets will go, and all this stuff is all playing into it. But what the Cardinals are clearly doing, Nathan, when we look at ways to accumulate talent, and we are mm-hmm. recording this as the Cardinals are making international amateur signings, including some significant ones. Luna is going to get he's one of the top 10 players, you know, very impressive talent out of the Dominican Republic. He's going to get one of the sizable bonuses that the Cardinals have had here in recent years, more than or $2 million or more. They haven't been up in that register all that often. They signed a player maybe a couple years ago, I guess, a couple years ago for that amount. But that's one route to get talent. The draft is another route to get young talent. The waiver claims, where they have been active, is another way to get numbers, to play the numbers game, right? To get the quantity. Yeah. They are. The other way to get talent and to use money that is not capped, that is not a bonus pool, that is not anything, is to buy it in trades. And the Cardinals, with their outlay of cash, are trying to take advantage of that. They are quite literally buying talent from other teams using the veterans that they yep. have. You know, and that has rewritten their top 10. You know, you look at it, more than half of the top 30 that the Baseball America recently put out of the prospects, more than half, or just about half, are all new to the organization since the trade deadline. So you're yeah. talking about a pretty big infusion. You know, you look at a top 10, and it's going to have two of the pitchers that they got from the Red Sox, and neither of them are Fitz or Dobbins, who are already in the majors and aren't eligible for the top 10 prospect list. So they're shelling out the cash to effectively sign young players. And that is a way that, you know, they haven't done it before, but I think that's a really notable way to build a team, to use that financial might, but it's just not a headline grabber.
Well, and we talked about the melancholy, you know, following this trade and others that may come, but like one of the realities is exactly what you pointed to, that the Cardinals have now one of the fastest rising farm systems in the majors. You know, they're not at the top yet, and I don't want to give anybody that impression, and may never be, you know, that talent may not pan out or whatever, but just you look at where, you know, the overall system, and certainly the top end, but also the overall system, where those were kind of, you know, Baseball America has its rankings, you know, MLB has its rankings, I think Fangraphs has its own rankings. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals were close to the bottom in a lot of them, and now they're rising. So there's progress being made. It doesn't look like it it certainly doesn't feel like it, especially when you have to, you know, say goodbye to Sonny Gray, Wilson Contreras, and a future Hall of Famer and Nolan Arenado. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a longer game than the 2026 season. And I think, and 2027 season, you know, that would have been on Arenado's deal. And the reality is, using those avenues to collect talent is the way to go now. And Bloom sees that, he's taken advantage of that. And he's, you know, kind of grabbed the bull by the horns, I guess you could say.
There was a real striking comment made by Chaim Bloom during the press conference about how it was quote unquote sobering how far the Cardinals had to go. When you heard or read that, I mean, did that resonate? I mean, that seems to be a level of probably bluntness about how far they have to go that has not been said before.
Yeah, it's a thing that I've and maybe that's why it didn't feel like I thought it should have, right? But I didn't grow up a Cardinals guy, you know. Mm-hmm. So like I don't have that lifelong love that like some of my friends do when they talk about it. And I, you know, I've got friends who are just, you know, it's kind of like when you hit rock bottom, you know, and you're like, okay, this is how bad this is. This is my realization that I need to change. And it feels like hitting, you know, rock bottom with your baseball team. You never knew it could get that bad until it did. Mm-hmm. And that was enough to kind of snap you out of it. And I think that's, you know, you talk about sobering, that's exactly what that is, you know? So yeah, sobering, I think is a great way to describe that. How do you climb out of that hole, you know, and what are the benchmarks? How do you, you know, sustain yourself while you do, man? I don't know. I've never hit that kind of rock bottom, so I couldn't tell you, but I can't imagine it's easy.
Yeah. And it speaks a little bit to maybe the Cardinals still having some cachet, however, that like some of the projections aren't yet saying they're at rock bottom. If we can agree that rock bottom is below the Pirates in the National League Central. And I don't say that like for a joke, though I guess that would have been a better punchline. But
it is technically a joke, I think. Yeah.
Okay. But if you, technically, I probably could work on my timing a little bit. But, you know, if you look at like projections for the NL Central, some of them still have the Cardinals fourth. Word has reached the projections, or maybe that's more reflective on how much money people are betting on the Cardinals. So they're changing the line. But, you know, I think it'd be really interesting if by the end of spring training, if they're predicted to finish fifth, and how rare that is for the end.
Oh, yeah. There was a new set that came out today. I'm trying to find them. I had seen it earlier. Yeah.
81 they projected for.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. I'm glad you had it on hand, because I mm-hmm. didn't. I made a note for myself and had to go searching through my notes because I have too many.
Yeah. Either the division can't help it because they have to play each other, but just middling, just right there along with the other team, 79 for the Pirates, for example.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. The whole division is kind of what it is, you know, and so they're going to...
Not the Cubs?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know,
whole division, you know, is not the Cubs.
And the Brewers, you know, kind of always, you know, outkick their projections, but are always kind of projected great like point. This, you know.
Good call.
So, you know, I think that's most of what it is the division is just, I mean, you saw this a handful of years ago with the AL Central, you know, mm-hmm. shortly after those Royals World Series, where like the Twins were okay to good and everybody mm-hmm. else, you know, or the Guardians would be okay to good and everybody else. So you saw some of that with those projections where they'd all be middling, you know, 78 to 84 wins.
Right. Pulls way
back. So I think that's part of it. I also wonder if how much, you know, some of these projections can't take into account like an Arenado trade like that quickly, like how much of this is prepared in advance. But then there's another part of my brain that goes, well, maybe they like Weatherholt or Gorman better there, and maybe they get a bump for that. I don't know.
I mean, you bring up a really interesting like question about where was the continental shelf for the Cardinals? This notion that like at some point in time, you know, there's a significant drop off that you don't always see coming as you walk out to see, right? Where was the continental shelf? You think that when the Cardinals traded Sonny Gray, fans are like, well, all right, yeah, I could kind of see that coming, but that doesn't substantially change the team. They trade Wilson Contreras, Alec Burleson moves to first base. So you go, okay, well, you know, that's a bit of a surprise, but how much does that change the projections of the team? Is there a different feel when they trade Nolan Arenado that, oh, this is a deeper cut? This is the continental shelf of the trades.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's actually a deeper cut, right? But I think that it probably feels that way to some. There's a lot at play here, right? There's the potential that used to be held with the pairing of he and Goldschmidt, you know, and others in that core from a few years ago. Yeah. There's the decline of the past few years and how that has it's been painful to watch at times. There's the $30 million being sent to move Arenado. So there's a lot at play here. I think the bigger thing in moving
it'll be Arenado, slightly less than that in the end. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Some of that is going to be covered by the Rockies.
Right. So, but the sending huge money to get rid of him is kind of what, you know, has rankled some folks. But I think the real thing that kind of maybe, I don't know, underlines all that is that, you know, this is going to be the first time in what, like 116 years that the Cardinals don't have a Hall of Famer in uniform as manager or, you know, coach or player.
Yeah. Since Roger Bresnahan suited up.
Yeah. This is going to be, you know, look, we may find out 25 years from now that the Cardinals do indeed have a Hall of Famer on the roster right now, but it certainly doesn't look that way. There's nobody who, you know, has that obvious resume at this point, but that to me, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Cardinals eras, you know, and when they begin, when they end, when the success, you know, the ebbs and flows. This, I think, after 109 years, that's a real stark reminder of, okay, this is a very different ball game we're playing than we've ever played in any other lull we've had. And I think that's again, you said it's sobering. It's a sobering reality for a lot of folks.
Yeah. You know, the Cardinals, I mean, Yadier Molina looks like a Hall of Famer. We'll see when he gets in, but then he would extend it. You know, Paul Goldschmidt, he'll have his champions for the Hall of Fame. Nolan Arenado, to me, certainly looks like a Hall of Famer when you win 10 consecutive gold gloves to start a career. You have the numbers that he has. Now, he could help by adding on some power numbers, right? They kind of put him up or vault him up. But his position overall has been overlooked in Cooperstown. And the way he plays it tends to be, you know, a player that will get the attention certainly in the wake of Roland getting in and Beltre getting in. You know, I wondered if, like, there's an element of this. Like, look, a year ago he vetoed the trade to the Astros and came to spring training. And with him came this notion, well, they're not going to be that bad. They can't be that bad. You know, they're probably going to be better. They just can't be. He struggled. He had the most productive offensive year by many measures of his career. And yet, you know, there was a time there where the Cardinals, you know, they won 8 in a row, right? Like they had a 500 record. They really kind of hovered around there until pulling the plug completely on their bullpen at the trade deadline. And then a lot of those guys got better in the bullpen. It just was very clear that, you know, at that point in time that, you know, Nolan was hurt. You had other guys, Brendan Donovan, was really dogged by injury and his production had waned after his all-star start. So you see things catching up with them. I wonder if the sense of trading Arenado this time just kind of creates the, all right, well, there's not even going to be that flicker that they showed last year. This assures it. It drowns the, you know, it what's the old campfire thing where like drown. When you have a campfire, that all the embers are out, right? This is the drown.
Well, I think there might be another drown coming, to be honest with you. I think this is kind of the beginning of that feeling. This is the, oh, there's probably not going to be much here. If and when Donovan is traded, I think that's when they go, oh, there is nothing here. You know, there's going to be very little, you know, no crumbs. Which I understand, you know, as somebody, you know, you root for these people for years, you genuinely form emotional attachments to them. You know, and when they're gone, it hurts, you know, no better way to say that. But, you know, the other side of that, literally the other side of that is that, you know, is it possible that Weatherholt comes up, takes the third base job and is better than Arenado was last year? Is it possible that Gorman finally figures out his strikeout issues and has a 35 home run season while hitting 260, you know, like there is possibility in there. Now, we all know how young teams, it takes time, right? I'm not suggesting they're gonna make the playoffs in 2026, but like there's reason to be hopeful, and it just feels very, you know, drab and kind of gray, you know.
Let's build off of what you just described. All right, so third base, the two players mentioned by Heim Bloom as possible third baseman would be somewhat of a platoon if they take over there, unless one of them goes completely, like, you know, just blossoms, which is possible. Nolan Gorman from the left, Thomas Tajesi from the right. You know, they want to see a little bit more versatility in Thomas Tajesi, so I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, I could see him getting some time in center field to see if he's a right-handed hitting option out there during spring training. So those are two candidates that Heim Bloom specifically mentioned for third base. He acknowledged that J.J. Weatherholt is going to get a look. There are folks within the organization who think that that's where J.J. will make his debut.
Yeah.
And they were kind of waiting to express that opinion until Nolan Arenado wasn't around. But that was even something that was talked about last year, was that, you know, Weatherholt needed to play third base, that that's a position that he could handle, and that it would be there for him if they could trade Nolan Arenado. Spring training will say a lot about that. You know, there's also the fact that JJ could be at second base if Brendan Donovan is still around. Yeah. Gorman could be at second base if Brendan Donovan's still around. And Brendan Donovan is your third baseman. He's played over there. Of all of that, of all those possible permutations, what do you think you'd like to see, and what do you think we will see? What's a conservative estimate of what we'll see? And then what's a best case scenario for the Cardinals with what they'll see?
Well, so in my mind, best case scenario is you probably trade Donovan realistically, right? And then you put your platoon at third and or at second, however you want to work that out, platoon, second, or third. But you've got Weatherholt, Tajesi, and Gorman in the lineup with regularity. Mm-hmm. You know, Gorman, we've seen Gorman's power, you know, when he's locked in and really cruising. He doesn't do that enough. I mean, that's just reality. And maybe a platoon is the way to get him to unlock some of that. Seeing Weatherholt on opening day, I think, is a way to excite a fan base, number one. But number two, he's, you know, there's an acclimation period, but he's kind of dominated at every level he's been at. And I kind of want to see what he can do at the major league level. So, you know, honestly, I would say, and I think the way this is going to come out might rub some folks the wrong way, but I think worst case scenario is having like Donovan and Gorman as your options. Mm-hmm. At second and third, just because of what it means, you know, it may be the best option for opening day 2026, but it's probably not the best option for even like July 2026. So I'm a big advocate for just getting on the boat and going now.
Important do you think that is to invigorate the fan base? I mean, like that's a real question facing this team. I think is, what part of your strategy is entertainment?
Oh man. I think that at the end of the day, sports is sports and entertainment is entertainment. They are different things. And as you can see by the WWE title belt behind me, I think sports entertainment is its own thing as well.
Gotcha.
But at the end of the day, sports,
you're bearing the lead. Did you win that?
Yeah. I fought my son for it, and he put him through a table, and I posed over when it was over. I think it's sports at the end of the day is in the entertainment business. So you have an obligation to put a decent product on the field. Now, everybody's definition of what a decent product is going to, you know, that's going to be different. You know,
right.
There are folks who only think like, you know, these guys are major league ball players. It doesn't matter how good they actually are. That's a show in and of itself. And that's the team they're going to put on the field. There are teams that, you know, like a lot of flash. That's the team they're going to put on the field. And then there's the Savannah Bananas. I don't think the Cardinals will go that far, although having the guy on stilts playing third base may not be the worst idea.
I think that's a lot to ask of JJ Weatherholt as a rookie.
Yeah, well, no, we just get the actual guy from the bananas.
Okay.
Listen, we don't want to put JJ on stilts.
I was like,
JJ,
how much more do you want to ask of this guy? I mean, is he also working tickets? Is he gonna be part of the pregame broadcast now? What are we asking?
Listen, if that's what it takes to invigorate the fan base, maybe we should. You know, I mean, listen, all the talk of the past few years about declining ticket sales. You want to sell some tickets? Put an exciting team on the field, even if that team's gonna lose.
Well,
you know,
so that's the thing. I don't have a good answer for it because, like,
I don't either. That's why I don't do that job. I do this one.
The Cardinals are talking about how they're building towards something, you know, and Heimblum spoke with KMOX. He goes regularly on there. He did part of their Gas House Gang this past week. And he talked about how, look, you know, there isn't a day that they're going to take the field or go to the ballpark that they're not looking to win. But they have adopted a long view, and I totally get that. Like, you don't want to say, like, hey, don't be competitive, but you also have to be pragmatic that, like, look, their purpose, and he said this, is their purpose is to be, when they're ready to contend, to be that much better, to just, you know, hoard wins, not wonder if they're going to win, not try to win, but, you know, guarantee wins, have like a swagger to them, be a favorite, have that look about them. And that's fine. You know, that makes a lot of sense. It's easy to sell tickets for that future year, whenever that is, 2030, because you are selling a team that, like, arrives at the ballpark with a chance to win, and the fans will respond. But what if you go too deep in 2026 and 2027? What if you give them nothing, you know, or your message is a little bit off, or your marketing is a little bit off, or your tickets are a little bit too high priced, or your broadcast is a little too hard to find?
Or you miss on these exciting young players you're trying to entice people. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you need something, some kind of, you know, selling point? And what is that?
I think there are markets where you do need that. Yeah. Little something extra. Now, you know, I don't know. I had always kind of thought, you know, St. Louis is like the baseball town, you know, and, you know, you put a JJ Weatherholt on the field and they're going to come. They're going to come watch that guy.
Interesting.
The last couple of years, you know, ticket sales have indicated maybe that's not the case, but I also know that, you know, this is a different team, and I don't just mean on the field. This is a different team than it was over the past 2 years. So, you know, maybe there is something to be said for, you know, you asked, what if they go too far down the hole? Maybe they already have.
Maybe. I mean, maybe there's a style of play. I've often wondered that. Is there a style of play that rejuvenates it? You know, the Gas House Game. I think there's something to having charisma from the players, having players who are out there and are captivating. I think players and a team that captures the imagination of the fans, and players' personality can be part of that.
Well, just look at Mason Wynn. He's a great example of that. I mean, he's beloved by the fan base. He's got a little bit of that swagger. He's got a kind of a flashier style. And I don't necessarily just mean, like, you know, on the field, which he certainly does, like, as a person, he's, you know, he's kind of a big personality, and people are drawn to him. You know, that's, and I'm assume that happens off the field too. I assume he's just, you know, that type of personality, you know, in a baseball town with, you know, some looking for excitement for the future. You know, you look at across the league, how many times, you know, some of these top prospects have been brought up to start the season. And I'm not even talking about, you know, just the big dreams of them, you know, making a run toward an award or something and helping with service time or salary or anything like that. You know, you look at, you know, what that does for a fan base, competing or otherwise, you know, it seems to always get people going. The first big case I remember of that was, like, Pete Alonso making the team in, like, 2014 or something like that with the Mets, you know, when it was, oh, they'll manipulate his service time. They'll, you know, they won't call him up until, and then they started him opening day. Fans went nuts. You know, there have been so many top prospects brought up that way in the past 5-10 years that maybe it doesn't last all season, but at least for a little while, it'll give you a shot in the arm. And if that player hits, literally and figuratively, then maybe you can ride that wave a little bit.
Yeah. There is another element to it that, like, what about these young players, Mason Wynn, JJ Weatherholt, whose early years are part of a slog? Like, if they just have to slog, does that become just part of what fans look to, like, oh man, they were here during the low times, and that just kind of like shrug? Or does that say, hey man, you were here during the hard times and you helped yank us out of it? Does that become part of like kind of the pitch to bring fans back? I think, you know, neither of us, not even the Cardinals don't either. They don't know how this ends. But it sure has this feeling that it could get worse before it gets better. Yeah. And if it gets worse, then how does it get better? Like, what's the jolt? It seems like you need some kind of lightning to strike, either from a talent perspective, a milestone perspective, or a team performance perspective.
You
can't bank on.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, that's the reality of it. You never know how many top prospects have come up and floundered. How many guys have, you know, never been on prospect radars and come up and become all-stars. I mean, it's a crapshoot. I mean, you have an idea, you know, you can guess pretty well, but you're never going to be, you know, guaranteed. But, you know, you want to talk about a shot in the arm or a jolt when you don't know what's coming next. Look across the state. You know, the Royals went from World Series contenders to back down to the bottom of the division. They bring up Bobby Witt Jr. and almost like shot out of a cannon. And listen, I don't want to make a comparison between those two guys because it's unfair to ask, you know, Weatherholt to live up to what Bobby Witt is doing.
Sure, sure.
But come out shot out of a cannon like that, you can really change maybe not the actual team's, you know, trajectory, but you can certainly change opinions about where you're headed. You can certainly change, you know, turn some heads. I don't know if you necessarily sell some tickets, but you start trending back that direction.
Well, maybe that comparison goes a little bit further than you even expected. And that's just the new calibration for the Cardinals. Maybe those days of a packed Busch Stadium, you know, maybe that's not possible. Maybe that's just not that. Maybe they are Kansas City.
I would hate to think that that's the case in such a great baseball town. But yeah, I mean,
baseball like region, you know, I mean,
yeah. But this, you know, it's not just the Cardinals though. I mean, everybody's competing for more and more attention now.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
There's so much more out there to do, and you know, everything costs more, and you know, there's a lot.
Oh
to
yeah,
that. It's you know, like I feel like a lot
fight
of,
over the entertainment dollars. I mean, look at movie theater and how quickly a movie shows up and is gone, or how empty a theater is. It's crazy.
I've seen a couple of you know, columns, opinion pieces, certainly on like Twitter, Reddit, things like that, where folks are kind of laying, you know, empty Busch Stadium at fans' feet. And I don't think that's fair. But I don't think it's fair to just lay it at the Cardinals' feet either. You know, I mean, the product has been rough the past couple of years, but there's
consumer activism is good. Like, I mean,
look, I agree.
If you don't like a restaurant, it's not going to survive. You know, if you are unhappy with how Target runs its business or the prices Target charges, and Target, you know, don't be mad if you want to sponsor the best podcast in baseball. Target's great.
Yeah,
it's great. But if it wasn't great, you know,
I love Target. I just don't love how much my wife spends there. Yeah.
Right. And then it would be Zaire. You know, I mean, look, like, you know, people would stop going and it wouldn't survive. I mean, it's a business, and
maybe that's what's happened.
Haven't given the product that they want.
No, but maybe that's what's happened. They've voted with their wallets definitely. The past couple of years, and now the change is being made. I think there's a reciprocal relationship though, where, you know, you ask for change, you know, by voting with your wallet. Once you get that change, come back and see the show that's being put on the field now.
Okay.
You know,
all right. Well, we're having this conversation on the eve of winter warmup, and, you know, winter warmup has been, you know, John Mozeliak used to talk about it as the kickoff, borrowing the phrase from another sport, but the kickoff of the season. You know, it was like the time to invigorate fans and get them excited about the year ahead and introduce new players and introduce new ideas and face questions from them. And they would, you know, pack a downtown hotel for 3 days. I mean, it would be, you know, lines would be long. Players would sign for hours. There would be huge events. There would be huge names there. I mean, there was the unveiling of Mark McGwire as the hitting coach there. There was, you know, Mo would try for theater every so often to introduce a new player or to announce a contract of some sort. You know, it's been, you know, part of their pep rally, quite literally a pep rally for their season. I have no idea what the tone of the place will be this year. They've reduced it by a day, so that tells you something. You know, they were unsure what players to have there because they might be traded, you know. Yeah. So Brendan Donovan's not there. Obviously, Nolan Arenado, they didn't expect him to be there or even ask him to be there. Lars Nupar is another player. But some of it, let's be clear, though, some of it is related to the, Pedro Páez is getting married. Yeah. You know, so he's not going to be there. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, who do you pitch? And, you know, you look at some of the highest dollars, you know, I think Sotoguchi's autograph is the highest. So you're pulling on the,
hey, that's a nice autograph though. I like Sotoguchi.
It's great. And I think it's a huge miss by the Cardinals not to charge $99 for it.
And oh, I love that. Yeah. Yeah. How much is it going for?
75. See, I mean, what's another 24? Like, they missed.
I should have been. Yeah. I feel like going on 99, like, especially if you could maybe balance it with another player who's got a little lower number, you know, like a McGuire autograph for 25, you know, huh?
Right. Right. There you go. Yeah.
Or that's how they get you.
Yeah. And Liam Doyle, you know, sold out fast. JJ Weatherholt sold out fast. So clearly, I mean, I don't want to read too much into that though, because some of that is just autograph speculation, right? It's the folks who are going to get those autographs to then sell later. So naturally they sell out a little bit more. It's hard to say, oh, well, those are the fans clamoring for those autographs. In a lot of ways, it's the dealers speculating to get those.
Yeah. The things I always look for in those situations, like, you know, fan expo or anything like that, is how many families are there, you know? The families are the ones who are going to come to the ballpark and want to catch a foul ball and have a hot dog and all that stuff. You know, it's the scalpers aren't, you know what I mean? So
I mean, that's who I'm looking for. Does it have the risk of being awake? Like, will it feel like a memorial there?
Sure.
Fredbird has got his work cut out for him.
Okay, but listen, if anybody can do it, it's Fredbird, and you know that.
He is a Hall of Famer.
Wait a minute. So the Cardinals do have a Hall of Famer on the roster.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, he is in the he's in the Mascot Hall of Fame. We've always kind of, I guess we have to broaden the definitions.
It's a Hall of Fame to me. Yeah. You know, so, and I feel like it's very much a Hall of Fame to Fredbird, so I think we should acknowledge it.
I mean, then this will continue on in perpetuity, because there's all these high schools now that have Hall of Fames, right?
Well, listen, now you're making me feel bad because I'm not in any Halls of Fame.
Well, I'm not either. So
you're Derek Gould. You will be one day.
No, I won't be.
You're the Derek Gould.
My high school doesn't have that. So, you know, and Mizzou doesn't have that either. I don't think
Mizzou doesn't have a journalism Hall of Fame.
No, they have the Medal of Honor. And
dude, my little school has a.
I think you have to be part of I think the people who win the Medal of Honor have to be like people who published newspapers in war zones or cracked Watergate. I think Mizzou has a pretty high threshold. Then wrote a lot about baseball.
I'm glad my school has a lot smaller threshold. I might actually get into that Hall of Fame one day.
Yeah, see, no, mine doesn't. My high school has an astronaut, and he and I got listed as distinguished alumni, I think. And I was like, oh my gosh,
good for you.
That's a sizable gap between astronaut Fisher and ink stained wretch.
No. You're right up there with the
astronaut. I spelled both of our names wrong, which was also humbling.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. That would be what would happen at my school. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I've completely lost track of
That's all right. That's all right. We're talking about how to invigorate, you know, and if we start.
Fredbird's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah. Fredbird has. Yeah.
Sorry. That's pretty good.
Yeah. What a detour. I don't know. Like, what's your feel for what's fair for fans? I mean, Arenado gear on discount. Oh, hey, Sonny Gray gear.
Oh, yeah. That's all coming anyway.
On discount. I'm eager to see, they don't have a Weatherholt jersey on sale yet, right?
That's one of those things kind of weird, right? Like, it's hard to market him before you call him up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, a Weatherholt 25 because he was drafted in – or, yes, he was drafted in 2024. So a Liam Doyle 25, that doesn't seem right. I don't know. You can't do a 24, obviously. I don't know. I mean, are we going to see a lot more retro jerseys? We're going to see a lot of fives and fours and sixes.
I'm certain of that. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see a handful of like Contreras, Gray, and Arenado.
Sure,
like,
we're going to see some zeros there for Mason Wynn. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of zeros. And I think the club needs to probably focus on not focus on, turn the focus on, you know, future forward. Mm-hmm. You know, I know fans, and you know, that's the nature of it, are going to kind of linger on the past and what's gone. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think the team needs to start selling. And I mean selling like you're actually trying to sell something, you know, not just, hey, we have young stars, like actually sell them, promote them, you know, make a big deal of them.
Yeah,
you
that's know, a great
turn point. The focus on them.
Great you know? Point, Nathan. And I think, you know, that's something that baseball doesn't exactly do as well as other sports. And I think in a lot of ways,
let the kids play campaign. Do you remember that?
I do. Yeah. Well, the Cardinals had a guy who was part of that, Harrison Bader.
Yeah. It just felt like kind of disingenuous with the way baseball has always kind of treated young players, you know? And it's like, those guys are the guys who are exciting. Those are the guys who people are turning out to see, you know, and that'll certainly be the case in St. Louis. You know, why not sell them? You know, it just doesn't feel like there's enough of that. You know, it's like, I've got a buddy who tried to buy a Mason Wynn jersey for like 6 months and nobody carried them
they didn't have jerseys.
So weird.
No.
Yeah.
They didn't have like an infant size jersey to wear, you know, for someone who is 0 to 1 years old for wearing a Wynn zero jersey, that sure seems
pretty good. Yeah,
that would have been really good. Or a onesie, I guess, a zero onesie, that would have been perfect. One onesies,
those two phrases back and forth, zero onesie, just broke my brain. I don't think I can handle that.
Okay, well, it's all in the market. I think, you know, if anything, you know, the MVPs of the coming year might be the social media staff then with the Cardinals.
Agreed.
And like how they can capture the personalities, how they can reach a younger crowd, how they can, you know, TikTok and, you know, their way to more attention, how they can go quote unquote viral with things, what kind of fun they can have at the ballpark. I think there's obviously a real fertile ground because they can take some strides that other teams are, and they could probably push it a little further. But I think that'll be a real challenge too, because they do need to tease out the personalities. This could be, in a lot of ways, like the stoicness of the team might shift a little bit, which would be something. It still has coaches who are part of that group, but, you know, Nolan Arenado burned hot, but a lot of that was internal, right? Like you could see it on the field, but a lot of his burning was internal. Paul Goldschmidt was very stoic, and in a lot of ways influenced other guys who also take that same approach. Brendan Donovan is similar to that. No, he's got some grit and flash to his game, but, you know, as far as like being exuberant and being maybe a little bit on edge or definitely creating, you know, those kind of like fiery moments, he's more on the Goldschmidt school than say the Contreras school. So I think that it'll be really interesting to see if, you know, as the Cardinals shift and as they go younger, what personalities emerge from this team as well.
Yeah, the personalities are going to be a big deal, not just for like promotion and marketing, like we were talking about, but you know, when those guys are out there having fun, you know, even if they're losing, if they're having fun, it makes it a little easier to watch, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think if they're having fun, it makes it a little easier for fans to have fun. And honestly, that's at the end of the day, that's what we're all looking for, right? Is a little fun, little escape from reality. Let those nine guys out there, well, 10 guys, I guess, if you count the batter, let those nine guys, you know, let us forget about whatever, you know, happened in the day for 2.5 hours, you know, whatever that is. And man, watching, you know, say Weatherholt sling it across the diamond to Burleson would be just so fun, you know, and especially if he comes out of the gate hitting like he has at AA and AAA.
Yeah.
And that'd be fun. It'd be an injection of not just energy, but just like positive feelings, you know? And I think there's not a lot of that right now.
All right. Before I give you something optimistic to look forward to in the coming year, before I give you or listeners something, you know, to kind of reinvigorate and excite what they'll see in 2026. How'd you do on the homework assignment from the most recent video podcast that we did? When we were talking about the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I want you to know that when I was in high school, I was terrible at homework. And when I was in college, I was even worse at homework. And it turns out that now, as a professional, I'm even worse.
No, you're better. Oh, you're even worse. Okay.
No. Right. Even worse at homework. I'm going to be totally honest with you and tell you I flat out forgot to do it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah. Omar Vizquel's chances and assists versus his peers at shortstop at the time.
Right. All right. So there's a lot of talk. You were asking about like Omar Vizquel, and he's not on my ballot. I haven't voted for him. Every so often I get asked, you know, was it off field stuff or anything like that? Look, I'm not going to take away what he did on the field. He was an accomplished shortstop. I have a hard time though being completely committed to the fact that all those Gold Gloves equated to him being the best shortstop when there were a lot of really talented players who didn't have the benefit that he did of playing for teams that could afford a lack of offense from that position. You think about the teams that he was on, and they were stacked. Like he was in lineups that produced multiple Hall of Famers in Cleveland and in Seattle. And he got the benefit of being the glove guy. Whereas, you know, like a Ray Sanchez, Cesar Torres, these other guys, you know, they were on teams that just couldn't afford that. They needed offense from that position, especially as shortstop started to change and to be Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter. You know, all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't just the Baltimore Orioles with Cal Ripken Jr. It was now there was a prototype of these shortstops who were great two-way players, both good with the glove, but also productive at the plate. So a guy like Omar Vizquel, he got to be, you know, on the field and play a bunch and accumulate a bunch of numbers because he had the benefit of being on teams with big bats that other players who were also elite defensive players didn't. And I wanted to keep that in mind. I also want to point out that, like, he played on strikeout flyball staffs, right?
Yeah.
And so this is just, you can side with all the Gold Gloves making him a Hall of Famer, and that's fine. But I wanted to kind of illustrate, like, what an elite shortstop is in this point of, just with the easiest and, pun intended, like, handy numbers. And so if you look
Thanks.
I worked on that. So if you look at the assist totals, right, and that's why I bring it up, like, Ozzie Smith had 8 years of at least 500 assists. You know, he led the majors in assists 8 times while shortstop. He led the majors in double plays 5 times. You know, so he just had this accumulation of making a lot of plays. Yes, that has to do with balls in play. You have to have the opportunity to do it, but you also make your own opportunity with how great you are, and to turn it into assists, those are outs. All right, this was the homework assignment. We'll see if without doing the research you come close to it. Is how many 500 season, how many 500 assist seasons did Omar Vizquel have?
What did he play, like 21 years, something like that?
Yeah.
Because you gave me the homework assignment, and because you just made the case that you did, it's going to be a small number.
Okay. He played 24 years in the majors.
I'm going to go 3.
Okay. The answer is 0. 0.
Man, I wanted to say 0. I thought about saying 0. I just knew it.
How many times do you think he led the majors, or led the league for that matter?
I feel like you're setting me up. So when I say 0, you're going to give me a different number, but I'm going 0.
The answer is 0.
Yeah.
Just something to think about. Just something to, like, consider. Yeah, I mean, again, like, a lot of Gold Gloves there. He was dazzling. He was dazzling in the field, right? I mean, the highlight reel. I know a lot of folks who I really, really like talking baseball with, really, really admire their opinion, really think he was the best shortstop they ever saw. Saw some really good ones there during that time. And I just look at that and go, man, look, comparing anybody to Ozzie Smith is fraught, let's be honest. But, like, context matters. And if you're talking about a guy who, you know, Ray Sanchez was really good, but gets overlooked, and how many folks remember him?
Man, I loved Ray Sanchez. He was one of my favorite players as a kid.
Great defensive player. Great, great defensive player. But was on a team that really needed more offense from that spot, as you know. You watched it. All right, so here's something to look forward to in 2026, and also a little peek behind the curtain, if you will. In the coming week, the group of folks, the Red Ribbon Committee, as the Cardinals call them, will meet to discuss the folks for the Cardinals Hall of Fame, since we talked a little bit about a Hall of Fame. the Cardinals 2026 Hall of Fame class. The players who are eligible for the fan ballot go by the name of Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina. All right, Nathan. So how would you handle this? You're in the room. You're in the room where it happens. Have to decide.
It's not, it's, listen, Nolan Arenado said it was a no-brainer. This is a no-brainer.
All right.
Put them both in.
It's up to the fans. So put them both on the ballot. But do you put anybody else on the ballot? Do you make the
fans
choose between the two for one?
No. What do you do? I think you choose the ballot, right? It's not like
we help choose. Yeah.
Well, right. I'm saying like, you know, you can just make the call, you know. Yeah. And I think that like probably just put those two guys on, call it a day. Let them have their moment together. First of all, not only do the fans want to see that, I have no doubt in my mind that those two would love to go in together and have that moment together. So no, I don't think you could maybe let in three, you know, you could let in an extra person or something. Maybe you do that. I don't know. But like those two kind of have to go together, I think. Yeah.
I am of the mind that you give the fans the chance. Like you don't just don't do that. But you give the fans the chance. Like,
doesn't that feel unfair to like everybody else on the ballot though?
No, I don't think
like
so.
That, like they know what's going to happen.
Yeah. So, but I think fans should like clamor. When I got my Hall of Fame ballot, I wanted to be what I called the chorus of acclamation. You know, just say Ken Griffey Jr. is a Hall of Famer. I was eager to do that. I know that he didn't need my vote to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't going to put him over the top of the 75, but I wanted to be part of that chorus. And there's a chance. This is great. Like, I think this is one of the coolest things is Cardinal fans will see 5 and 4 on their ballots and they can vote probably for both of them, probably for both of them. I think that's how that's going to go.
But 99.8% are going for both of them. Yeah.
No. But I'm saying like, but you wouldn't ask them to vote for only one, right? Like that's part of this gig is if you put out a ballot, how do you do it so that they're not just asked to vote for one? And then you pick the two that get the highest, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. But that makes sense.
Because you want to be part of the chorus of acclamation. And this is the fans who get to do this. Like, no one's going to ask. It's not going to be like the Hall of Fame ballots with the writers where they're going to be like, well, why'd you leave this guy off? No one's going to know. All there is going to be is there's this excitement about getting to vote those guys into their red jackets. I think that's really cool. I think that's a really cool thing that fans
who else will could be able to on the ballot with them.
Oh, you have some of the remaining folks who have held over the past few years. You know, you'll have the Steve Carlton probably. He's not yet in the mix for the he's still, I believe, in the realm of the fans voting. And, you know, you got there's not really a whole lot.
There's not anybody who's going to rise to the level of an Albert Pujols or a Yadier Molina.
But you also want to kind of create a ballot again to give the fans the experience of voting those guys in.
I can buy that.
Yeah.
You just put the ballot out with a foregone conclusion that it's going to be these two guys and
right. Just prepare for it being,
if
those
it's not,
guys,
you but, roll with it, but yeah,
but give the fans the chance to say, we put them in.
I can buy that.
Yeah. All right. And then where do they hold the ceremony? Where do they hold the induction?
Oh, I don't. What are you? Maybe an Air Force base or something? You're going to need a lot of room.
The University of Michigan's football stadium.
Yeah. That's a great idea. Put it in Memorial Stadium in Columbia. That would probably hold most of the people. You can get some of the overflow outside in the parking lots.
Right. And carry it on the scoreboard to a sellout crowd at Busch Stadium.
Yeah, and probably like all the local theaters in Missouri as well. Yeah, and probably Illinois too.
Yeah, get it in. Yeah, Ronnie's and everything like that. Work it out.
Like, closed. Don't do like pay per view or anything. Do it closed captioning TV, like it's 1984.
Stream free on the app.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You wouldn't even want to do that. We just like you have to buy a ticket at a movie theater, like it's WrestleMania 3.
So, no, all kidding aside, where do you do it? I mean, they've done it in the courtyard outside the hall at Ballpark Village. Do you do that?
I think that moment's probably too big for that, don't you think?
Yeah, you got to do it.
Like, don't you think? Yeah, it's got to be ballpark. It's got to be inside in front of everybody.
Got to have the current team there watching.
Yeah, well, yeah. Let thousands and thousands and thousands of people, you know, let say thank you, honestly. Yeah. But then also, like, that's going to be a big deal for, you know, you talk about change, you talk about Weatherholt and, you know, all these young guys, you know, imagine being a Mason Wynn or a JJ Weatherholt, watching that happen so early in your career and going, man, this could be me one day, you know, especially with those two names, you know, those two guys, that's a big deal.
Also, it would be good to do it before a game and have those young guys play in front of a packed, exciting house.
Love that.
For at least once this year, but to have no choice but to, like, hey, this is the goal. This is what it used to be like. This is what it was when 5 and 4 put on the uniforms. This is why number 28 wanted to stay. You know, this is what you're chasing. This is what's possible here. Go play this game. You know, maybe they tie it to a time when they're playing a really good team. It only adds to sort of the electricity at the ballpark. I think the Cardinals could really goose something into a big moment. Not just one that Pujols and Molina deserve going into their Red Jackets, but one that has, you know, ripple effects and puts this current team in front of the largest crowd they'll play in front of at home this year, and make that a moment for them. We'll see how they play. I mean, obviously you can't control what happens in the game, but you can control the fact that 30 minutes after Albert Pujols puts on a red jacket, 25 minutes after Yadier Molina puts on a red jacket, maybe 22 minutes. Albert might talk for a bit, but maybe
it might be a little less than 22. Yeah.
Yeah. 22 minutes after, Yadier Molina puts on a red jacket, shortly after they clear the stage, Weatherholt walks up to a standing ovation, because that's the home crowd. You know, it's primed for that to be like a really cool event, regardless of what their record is, regardless of how guys have performed, regardless of this whole offseason and the shedding of all-stars, regardless of all of that. The Cardinals could script quite a moment by Pat pulling that all together and create something that says, this is what used to be, and this is what we want to be again. Let's share it for a moment.
Well, we've talked a lot about, you know, this old era and this new era and how you sell one, you know, while one is ending, you know, maybe that's a good way to marry those two eras, you know, bridge that gap. And, you know, we're talking about the players, you know, and what they get to see in that kind of moment, but it's a good way to bridge the gap for the fans to bring 40,000 people back to the ballpark and have them remember why they used to like go in there in the first place, you know.
Yeah. Put on a show. I mean, they don't have to win, but put on a show, have everything be at their best that day, and wear the home whites, you know, like have everything geared. It's, you know, there's gonna be some melancholy to this season. There's gonna be some pangs of nostalgia. There's gonna be some learning curves and growing pains and all the stuff that we can toss out there for a young team. But maybe, just maybe, you can calibrate that day to be the peak of the year, and that will have some residual effects. You know, that could enliven what happens, you know, from there forward.
Hey, sometimes all it takes is a spark to set a fire, right?
That's right. That is Nathan Mills, editor at the Post-Dispatch. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. You can find all of our coverage from the winter warm-up, including coverage from columnists Lynn Worthy and Benjamin Hockman, at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. There's also videos. We have this podcast here that we are racing towards our 14th year of podcast, which I think similar to like the blog that I started, it was older than the word blog. I think this podcast is almost older, not quite older, but almost older than the word podcast. But you know, 14 years, that's pretty good.
I'm trying to remember the first time I heard the word podcast. It was around then, probably in my early 20s. So yeah, that's
late teens. Now you're just bragging how, you know,
yeah, right.
How young you are. So that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. One of us looks like Santa Claus. Yeah. It'll be fine. Yeah.
That's all right. I'm working on my white walls, you know, so I'm hoping to go full Sterling. That would be very nice. Yeah.
I think it's going to be a good look for you. Yeah.
I hope so. That'd be nice. I can get there. So you can find all of that there. Find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcast. It's brought to you weekly by Closets by Design of St. Louis. It's available on iTunes. Rate and review it so I can learn from those ratings and those reviews what to do in the year ahead. We are steamrolling towards spring training and the start of another season of the best podcast in baseball and a start of another season with the Cardinals. Before you know it, I was looking at when I'll be heading down that first week of February. I'll be headed down there. Cardinals report, Cardinals pitchers and catchers. First workout is February 12th. The full squad is February 16th. What that full squad will look like, Nathan? TBD.
Derek, I want you to, when you get down there, make a video with those guys asking them how their wife feels about them starting work right before Valentine's Day.
Well, I know how they, I mean,
oh yeah, you're gonna be a guy working.
These guys are gonna be married. They're all gonna be in their early 20s.
Man, I was married at 25, so.
Well, I got married at 25. Yeah, no, I used to go after Valentine's Day. Now I go before, and oof.
Yeah, I don't envy you when it comes to that.
Better have those flowers delivered, man.
Maybe you're gonna get in a Hall of Fame for that.
For flowers.
Yeah, you're in the best husband flowers Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Oh, I got no chance, man. Ouch. I got a better chance of getting in my high school Hall of Fame that doesn't exist.
I'm going to start a Hall of Fame at your high school and make sure you're the first inductee. Right, that astronaut is not getting in here.
I think Jack's got a good chance of being
your important work must have been done on Earth, sir. Absolutely not.
That would be quite an achievement. They're going to put a statue of him. They should. You know, you've driving it down, it's going to have a sign that says home of astronaut Jack Fisher.
That's what I want. I want a sign outside my town that says home of astronaut Jack Fisher. I don't actually want one that says home of Nathan Mills. I don't want people to know I live here. I just make them think Jack Fisher lives here.
That's my claim to fame. I shared a class with an astronaut.
I shared a class with a guy who did the Ninja Turtles cartoon series for Nickelodeon.
Oh, I was going to say Kevin Eastman or Peter Laird.
No, that would be awesome, but I'm way too young.
That would be awesome. That would be like, I'd have a lot of questions.
No, that would have been awesome. No, it was the Ninja Turtles Nickelodeon cartoon from like 2011, something like that.
And now all the listeners have a lot of questions of how come I knew those names so fast.
Oh, I think the ones who know those names know exactly how you knew those names so fast. There's a lot of Ninja Turtles nerds out there right now going, yeah, I love Ninja Turtles.
They didn't listen that late into the podcast.